Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Andrea and Ron DeFeo, Dr. Robert Peskin, and Dr. Raymond Ellis. Positive Train Control, or PTC, is a system of detection, communications, and computer technologies designed to assure safe railroad operations. PTC was mandated nationwide in the United States in the Federal Rail Safety Improvement Act of 2008, with an implementation deadline of 2015. That deadline was extended twice and now stands at the end of 2020. To understand more about PTC, we're talking with Paul Victor, who's an experienced railroader who for 9 years served as the president of the New York and Atlantic Railroad. It's a short line railroad serving customers in Brooklyn, Queens, and Long Island, connecting to major Class One and other railroads. So welcome, Paul. I'm really glad to talk to you today.
Glad to be here.
So let's start with your definition and your background on PTC, what it is and what it's supposed to do.
Okay, PTC has several points of origin. The one I dealt with was prior to 2008. PTC, from a financial standpoint, probably has the best return and the simplest application is when you overlay it on dark railroad, which is a railroad with no automated or fixed line signal system at all. And the original logic of CTC is built on what's called track warrant control, TWC, a common methodology in the U.S. to govern railroads that are not equipped with automatic signaling. And one of the first applications was in Panama. And in Panama, the system was up and running by 2006. In point of fact, the FRA made a visit to Panama to take a look at it. And it's a simple application. It was 50 miles across the isthmus. Trains were generally of a reasonable, consistent size and speed. Two passenger trains a day and maybe 13 to 15 freight trains crossing the isthmus. And that was one of the first physical applications where it became a PTC operative railroad. And the technology that grew from that ultimately became the ITEMS version in the U.S. And the ITEMS version is what that or variations of that are largely used throughout the country, with the exception of the Northeast Corridor area here in the metropolitan northeastern area, where the acronym is ACCESS. And ACCESS is not physically interoperable with ITEMS at all. It's a transponder-based system rather than a satellite-based control system.
What's the way of tracking the position of trains?
Well, in the Northeast Corridor, the way trains are tracked, when you pass a transponder, you know the transponder, fixed location. So you have readouts where the train is passing a fixed transponder of a known location when the train gets to that point. But ACCESS is not the same as ITMS. ITMS is real-time information on the train, real-time information on braking curves. So to support ITMS, which is the national network, you need to know how heavy the train is, where the train is exactly, because of the continuing change in the braking distance curves that are done in real time. And ACCESS, it's a preset fixed curve and speed reduction that is set in advance, and you live within those constraints. It's far more rigid than ITMS.
So it makes sense then, in a case where the network is simple and the trains are pretty much all the same, as you described the Panama situation.
Well, Panama is actually more of an ITMS version, but ITMS is now the national system. The ACCESS system was developed quite a while ago for Amtrak purposes, so ACCESS is an older technology, and that's why it's more transponder rather than satellite-based.
So what's the abbreviation ITMS stand for?
Okay, it is Interoperable Electronic Train Management System, which is the conventional thing, as I said, throughout the country. ACCESS is Advanced Civil Speed Enforcement System. And it's kind of a mouthful, but what it is PTC and the Northeast Corridor and associated lines such as the Long Island and Metro North and other operations that touch the corridor.
Would it be naive for me to make an analogy between the simpler system and a block signal system?
As a matter of fact, the ACCESS system, the way it is employed in the Northeast Corridor, really is built on top of the automatic train control and block systems that exist. So it's tied, and that's also one of its complications, because you're building a new complicated system on top of an old but yet complicated system itself. And really, in the Northeast Corridor, ACCESS or PTC it's in patches as you approach absolute signals or home signals. And between these locations, you're actually relying on the historic automatic block cap signal systems that existed prior to. So it's really a combination of two systems here in the Northeast.
And is ITMS tied to global positioning satellites location?
Yes, it's going to be satellite-based. It tracks the train within a few feet. And it's real time because it takes the actual train consist, and the actual train consist and the exact track segments you're going over generate a unique stopping distance profile. And the stopping distance profile in ITMS is updated in real time. So as you're going down the railroad, it is always recalculating the stopping distance.
Does ITMS require any trackside equipment?
Well, less than ASSS. It requires a surety of where there's any turnout, so you have to make sure the switches are lined correctly. And ITMS could work over dark railroad. It could work over railroads with automatic block signaling system, CTC, as well as where you do have cap signaling. So it could be superimposed on any of those. And as I said, the original PTC was a leap from dark railroad TWC control to PTC control without the investment of fixed hardware or signal systems. It was like going from the telegraph in Panama, from the telegraph right to the cell phone, put it that way.
So the more sophisticated system right now is, and the national system is ITMS.
That's correct. Also, it covers, let's say, ITMS or its close first cousins cover 90% of the PTC network. And let's say 10% is going to be ASSS-based.
Is everything interoperable?
Well, actually, the goal and the requirement is it must be interoperable, and the interoperable condition is what leads to a lot of the complication of PTC implementation, because you then have to pass data from one railroad to the next. In the case of ITMS, there's a feature that PTC in the legislation required in 2008 that goes beyond really stopping a train short of another train, and that has to do with temporary conditions that vary. Temporary conditions would be a slow order, problem with a crossing, some other issues that are real-time in nature, such as slow orders that are constantly evolving. And the legislation provides that you must have a train be able to know and react positively with surety to temporary speed restrictions of one kind or another. So that means you need the real-time flow of information from field to central office on transmitted then back to the actual trains in motion. And the complication and the need for interoperability is engines of one railroad and crews of one railroad frequently travel over another. So you have to be able to move the data from railroad A to railroad B, and then railroad B can transmit it to railroad B's locomotive traveling on railroad A.
So the host railroad can't talk to the visiting locomotive?
That's right. It goes through the owner or the controlling party of the locomotive, because different railroads have different frequencies and different unique packages, because different vendors install PTC technology on various carriers. So the interoperability means you have to have the flow of information amongst all the carriers in a particular route.
It strikes me that that adds huge complexity.
Incredible in two ways. Incredible in volume, incredible in terms of the complexity of adding that real-time dimension of temporary conditions to the requirement. The easiest part of the whole thing is stopping the train. It's not difficult.
The real-time conditions, if you will, for example, the slow orders, which are related to infrastructure condition or a maintenance activity, arguably that would have to be entered by hand.
Well, you have a dispatcher that will put up information regarding slow orders in real time that would be transmitted to the trains. And now the dispatcher not only has to transmit it to all the trains, but he's got to transmit it electronically to the other railroad, so the train of the other railroad, in addition to the dispatcher's instructions, it will be protected by PTC enforcement with a locomotive of a third party.
Was this complexity part of the explanation of why there's been a need to slip the deadline for implementation?
It's a huge component of the delay. In addition to the normal, just the sheer scale is impressive when you think of all this real-time data going across from one railroad to the other across the breadth of the nation. And the Class 1 carriers have had to take up a huge hunk of communication capacity in certain radio frequency ranges just to support the thing.
And what's the interaction with the short line railroads, for example, the railroad that you've worked with in New York and Atlantic?
Okay, in the case of New York and Atlantic, our interoperability is limited since we only touch and operate over the Long Island Railroad. are points of interchange with other Class 1 carriers or within yard limits where there is no PTC in effect. So with the Long Island Railroad, we must be able to talk with them. We must be able to support every requirement they have with our locomotives so they could be run seamlessly within the Long Island. And so we have to adopt the Long Island's technology in its entirety.
And that was, I think, in all fairness, an unfunded mandate, right? You have a law that says you have to do it.
Yeah, we're obligated to do it. You know, there are grants or pieces of it, but largely it's unfunded and you just have to do it.
So take me back to ground zero, and that is, what's the benefit that we're getting out of this?
Well, the FRA did some analysis, and also pieces of the Long Island Railroad prior to PTC did have something called automatic speed control, was their term, which is automatic train control, cab signal equipment. And the cab signal equipment would keep one train from hitting another, but it was not sensitive to temporary conditions. But yet the risk of one train plowing into another, such as what occurred in California in 2008, the 50-year-old train control system would have prevented that one particular kind of accident. Train A just walloping into train B. The refinements are, as I said before, the temporary slow orders and also permanent speed restrictions that could be detailed and programmed into a PTC application. So what you gain is at least the incremental benefit of not plowing through a slow order or other temporary permanent speed restrictions. So that's the incremental gain. And when you look at it that way and you look at the total national investment, safety is always good. Reducing a derailment or an accident is always positive. As to the economic cost-benefit analysis, probably at best marginal. In fact, several years ago, the FRA did an analysis and found that the return was pretty low.
Does that suggest that there are places where PTC is a really good investment and places where it is not such a good investment?
Well, yes. And the federal government, in part of the legislation, is defined where PTC must be in place. It's by far not the whole national network. Round numbers, I could be off a little bit. Let's say PTC is going to be in effect on approximately 70,000 route miles across the United States, which is, so to say, about half the network, U.S. network. So, and the normal definitions are revenue passenger service is operated over the track or over a certain level of hazardous commodities that pass over a track segment. If you don't meet those two criteria, PTC then becomes an optional matter. So what we're saying in round terms, half or 60% of the network falls into the criteria of having the obligation of installing PTC.
And are the railroads, the Class 1s, being careful about not investing where the mandate doesn't exist?
I would say so, because each time you do it, it's expensive, and it gets far more expensive based on what you're overlaying. The cheapest thing to put PTC in is probably where you don't need it within the national network, because railroads that are dark, that is without automatic fixed signaling today, generally tend to be lighter density lines. But each time you overlay PTC over a more complicated base, the installation becomes more complicated, because then you have to have interaction between what you have already there and the new PTC addition. So it's the interplay between the two that adds complexity. And that's why in the Northeast Corridor, the highest level of complexity is when you're overlaying it and working in concert with existing cab signaling systems.
So the areas that you call dark areas, are they operating on at least what we used to call train orders?
Yeah, train orders are long gone. And largely, most railroads that operate in a general code run those territories with what's called track warrant control, TWC. And TWC gives you a lot of the efficiency of a signal system without making the investment. Key to TWC is there's no superior of trains. There's no right of one train over another. It's far simpler than a train order. And also the block length between any two fixed identifiable points, which means you could vary block length and need with your traffic needs.
Well, I need to study up more on that to understand how TWC works, but let me take you back to the benefit side. Some people have written that one of the positive arguments for PTC is that the data coming in will help railroads manage more efficiently. Do you see any of that?
It's possible that it will, and it does give you real-time information, and it does force you to know exactly how long and how every train is at every moment. So the data requirements to feed ITMS do increase the capability of knowing what your business is and what's going on in the field. And there's some benefit to that for sure, just in terms of data availability and tracking what you're doing.
And do you see any signs that the railroads are using that data?
That's a question for Class 1 carriers that are using ITMS proactively. And also, you could interlock it with other technology because you could find, for example, if a train is speeding in real time, if the guy's going went through a slow order too fast or is going a little bit above the mandated limit, you would know right away. And that is a safety benefit. You're not going to find out the day after. You're going to find out in real time.
If an operator is speeding, does the ITMS system step in and seize control?
Yeah, it will take control. It'll take control. If you're speeding, you're going beyond the tolerance limit, it can intercede and protect the operation.
So I would assume that that might reduce some derailments.
Yes, that is the positive part of it. And as I was saying before, it's a leap ahead on dark railroad, a leap ahead on signal railroad, a little bit less of a leap ahead if you already had cap signal control that would intercede if you're running close behind another train.
Okay, I get that. So what would I see if I climbed into a locomotive that had ITMS aboard? Is there information that's going to the operator or is it automated?
The key thing is the operator who's running the train has to stay within a profile. And the profile would be the braking distance ahead of the train. And normally there'll be an indication of the braking distance and how you stand relative to the braking distance. And the braking distance has a penalty curve feature. The penalty curve feature is if you touch that line or cross it as you decelerate or don't respond to a reduction in speed, it will begin the process of applying the brakes.
Is that recoverable in the sense that an operator can say, okay, let me take control back and slow the train down, or will it force the train to stop completely?
Well, you have variations of that by carrier and how severe it is, but normally the goal is to never touch that line. And what many carriers have, it's called seconds to penalty. It's a time feature. So long as you keep decelerating at the predicted rate, you're going to be 15 seconds short of a penalty situation. So he could watch the seconds the penalty and know if he's creeping up on the crossing the magic line.
Does that data affect his job evaluation?
It could. Well, first of all, he's going to pay attention to what he's doing. And the braking curves are such that they reflect normal operation of the train. They're not asking the guy to do anything that he wouldn't do anyway.
Yeah.
It just ensures that if he doesn't do it, the system will.
The system will take over. Let me ask you a futuristic question, and that is, is PTC leading us in the direction of fully automating the bigger railroads?
At some point in the future, when we're discussing driverless trucks, driverless airplanes, if you will, why not driverless trains? But that's on the other side of the horizon because you have other issues just as you do with all these other modes as well. But is it conceivable? I guess it's conceivable.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure from the competing industries.
I was just going to say that that is a long-term goal. It might be a goal, but it's too soon to say if it is a goal at the moment. But what you might be able to do is get down to a one-man crew, perhaps, from the normal current standard of two people. And you could reduce the skill level of the crewmen by automating more and more of the job. And still reduce it from locomotive engineer in the future, maybe be more of a locomotive attendant. That I don't know. That's, let's say, subject to future negotiation, but certainly in the realm of plausible outcome.
That's a ways off, and I think those of us that fly on commercial airlines see that coming and are a little bit trepidatious about it.
Yeah. So it's on the other side of the rainbow, but it doesn't mean it's not possible.
Paul, this has been really helpful, really interesting for me. I'm going to go back and study the books a little bit and learn more about that. I appreciate your introducing us to PTC. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please encourage your friends to subscribe to our podcast. The Infrastructure Show is recorded in the Reeves Audio Recording Studios in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Jim Reeves, Chief Engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.